The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's my man, Kelly Bidlin.
What's up, bro?
What's happening?
Oh, much. Just chilling.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Drew Dinsick about to join us.
Yeah.
Talk U.S. Open and National Football League with us. Michael Montesano, Circa Booby Prize winner back in 2020, to give three college football plays and a couple NFL thoughts as well and bets. And then Paul Spohr, a little later on, we'll talk Major League Baseball. The White Sox did it again, by the way. Led after five, lost the game. I gotta get an updated tally from Borchard as to how many double results the White Sox have had. We're going to show a tweet that is just amazing about the White Sox a little later on.
What's it at least? Like, do you know a number of what we're up to at least with the double results?
It is around, it is approaching 20, I want to say.
Insane. That is insane.
Don't hold me to that. We'll find out later.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll find out later. But it's,
I'll put you on the spot, sorry.
But the point being that the average price of those throughout the year has been close to 7-1. So if you just played that double result, by the way, they lead after five, they lose the game. If you played it blindly every single game of the season, that alone, forget your losses on all the other, the one unit you'd lose on all the others, but you would have gotten like 7 units on all this. So you'd be up, way up on the season, even if you factored in all the losses at this point.
Which is crazy.
So this is from James Fagan. This is, okay, White Sox lost to the Tigers last night, 6-3. Tigers rookie Ty Madden made his debut despite a 7.97 ERA at
AAA. How does that
happen? So they're like, yeah, you're just going to play the White Sox, so we'll just throw you in here anyway. He allowed one earned run over 5 innings. Then the bullpen, it should be noted, last night, they blow their 31st save of the year. The White Sox pen blows their 31st. Think about that. The White Sox bullpen has blown 31 saves. They are now 31, at full record, 31-101, 70 games under. 70. 31-101. And they're 3-33 versus division opponents Kansas City, Detroit, and Minnesota.
How is that? I actually think that last line is the most mind-blowing. How are you that bad against your division?
Someone responded, every single one of those lines is more mind-blowing than the previous.
It really is.
I mean, what,
so they could really have double their amount of wins than what they have.
They're on pace to set the record here for the worst. There's the worst winning percentage record of all time, which is like the Philadelphia Athletics back in the early part of the 20th century. And then there's the worst 162-game schedule record, which is 40-102 by an early 60s version of the Mets. So they're going for it, baby.
3-33. Wow.
3-33 versus Kansas City, Detroit, and Minnesota. Yeah. So what does that mean? You know what the thing is? You know why Cleveland is left out of that? Because they actually beat Cleveland several times.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I forget we talked about that before.
Don't I know it? Because what was that? Not March, April, but May. That's what torpedoed the Cleveland bet in the month of May. Because they lost to the White Sox twice or something like that.
Even when we first brought up that bet, the double result kind of bet, I would have never thought we would have been sitting here at this point on August 27th still talking about it being a thing. You know what I mean? You just like it. Something like that usually doesn't play out the entirety of the season.
Sports futility is amazing, but particularly over a 162-game schedule. And there's no reason to believe anything will change here from now to the end. Tennis plays. Can I do that before we talk about the guide here? Tennis plays. This has been, the strangest 2024 has been the strangest tennis season. It has been complete streaks of awesomeness followed by complete streaks of futility. My own personal futility in these. Massive hard court season early. Then clay was unlucky. Grass was terrible. Then the Olympics clay and restart of hard court was fantastic. And then I just had the worst streak ever last week. And then yesterday we have walkover. We were on our way to perhaps hitting a $3 dog on against Sakari yesterday on Yifan Wang, and so Sakari then quits, and so we don't get that. Now, if you did have, if it was graded at shops where you only needed one set to complete, you were a winner there, and yesterday was actually just a tick of a loss, just barely. But if you didn't have that and you had it for a full grade, it was just sort of an awful day after that. And that's usually how it goes. Like, oh, we were about to win this big thing and it didn't work out through no fault of our own. Oh, watch this. We lost a five-setter and a tiebreaker, that kind of thing as well. Today, this is a weird day in terms of betting lines. I ended up with five, three on the men's side, two on the ladies' side, and they're all dogs. They're all dogs. On the men's side, should I give you a shot at these?
Yeah, yes, please.
All right. Please, men's side, please. Go.
Tristan Schoolkate.
That's correct.
Over Taro Daniel.
That's right.
Where's Tristan from? Great Britain or Australia?
Australia.
Yeah.
And that's really a fade of Taro Daniel, who's been terrible.
Okay. All right. And then we got Jakub Menšík over Felix Auger-Aliassime or Jacob.
Menšík, Auger-Aliassime, sure.
Jakub or Jacob?
Jakub.
Okay. Hey, I got
plus 263. Jakub Menšík was a guy we hit a lot in the early hardcourt season early this year. Plus 263. So we're counting on the magic to come back today on him.
And then, boom, Felica. Yeah, I can spell it. I did it again in the graphic. That's right. Lerner Tien, plus 240 over Arthur Fields.
Lerner Tien, who's a young American who was great at Winston-Salem last week, plus 240 over the Frenchman Arthur Fields. Yeah.
Eva Lice, plus 195 over Maria Buskova.
I'm going to go Eva Lice there. Plus 195, sure.
Buskova, I know.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this one. Varvara Lepchenko, plus 132 over Brenda, oh my gosh, Fervertova.
Nailed it.
Really?
You sure?
Just mumbled words.
Plus,
just mumbled just letters.
Just sounds came out of your mouth. That's Linda Fruvertova's sister, by the way. Lepchenko's numbers on hard courts are great. Plus 132 on Lepchenko. So it's Schoolkate, Menšík, and Tien on the men's side. All big dogs. Lice and Lepchenko on the ladies' side. So we'll see what happens. By the way, you just watched that U.S. Open, dude. I want to be no place on earth rather than there.
It's really
the
cool.
Energy is unbelievable. I just want to fly there and hang out in the stadium for 2 weeks.
Yeah. You're right. The problem is, I don't know. I feel like all the tennis tournaments or all the Grand Slams are bucket list ones for me. But like
this one, though.
Like you always bring that up. Australian Open's probably the most unlikely for me to ever go to, so I'll be okay. But I still think I'd have Wimbledon and French Open above the U.S. Open.
Me too.
But that's part of, like, you know, international travel.
Yeah, just awesome to watch. Sabalenka against Priscilla Hahn last night was unbelievable late into the night. Sabalenka just pulverizing the tennis ball. And Hahn did nothing wrong. She was actually great, but she still got beat 6-3, 6-3. The other thing, the new NFL betting guide, our NFL betting guide addendum, part deux, is out now.
This is a good idea.
Whole bunch of new props are out from everybody here at the network at VSiN. It's available for download now. Check it out. Quickest way is to go to the website, vsin.com. But I thought it'd be, by the way, it's the Pro Edition update, we're calling it, the NFL Betting Guide Pro Edition update. Week one betting systems, best bets, a lot of props from everybody with all explanations. Everybody does write-ups. Subscribe now at vsin.com/betting-guides. How about that?
I was the first one to get my picks in. That's all I'm going to say. First one at the network.
I might have been the last.
It's not a race.
I might have been the last. Sorry, Adam Burke.
It was probably the last.
I'm always apologizing to Adam. Sorry about the Guardians thing in March, April, and May, too. Hope they make it okay. I thought it'd be cool this morning. Go back to the original one, which we did in June, and we have a grid where every VSiN, I don't know, it's like 20 deep of VSiN hosts.
Yeah.
Every division winner, we had a pick. Every wild card, three per conference, obviously. Then, of course, NFC, AFC champion, and Super Bowl champion. And I want to say, so I looked up ours, Kelly, and I don't want to say it. I think this is true. You came out looking way cleaner than I did, because I have a couple in there where I'm like, what was I thinking?
This was a great idea by you, because there is absolutely so the whole idea, we're going to go over what we put in there.
Yes.
And what would we change
what
now?
What would we change?
And I definitely have some changes as well.
I absolutely have one. So, okay, let's do the NFC real quick. We both have Philly to win the division. I'm even down on Philly, and I still like that I have Philly.
No change there for me. I like the Eagles.
I have Green Bay. You have Detroit in the north. I don't love it, but I'm not changing that. We both have the Falcons in the south, and we both have the Niners in the west. Now, when it comes to the wild card, you went Dallas, Green Bay, and Seattle, which is a great pick. I went Detroit, Dallas, and, you ready? The Washington Commanders. Because I thought the NFC is going to be, you know, it's not as good as the AFC. I got to pick one outlier. I'll take Washington. But you know what? I'd rather have your Seattle at this point. So I regret that one.
That's more you coming around on Seattle, though.
Correct.
Right, yeah. Correct. Than you being completely
That's talking myself into a Mike McDonald bet. You know, as coach of the year, that's just thinking that their defense is going to get better as the season goes on, as he implements his system. So I have a regret on the wild card. Shall we go to the AFC real quick?
Mine's really chalky. Like, that is the
yeah, there's nothing wrong. Yeah. Okay, AFC, I think we're both nuts.
I'd like to make a change. I think, are we both switching to the Jets?
Yes.
We're both switching to the Jets.
I have the Dolphins, you have the Bills.
Both switching to the Jets.
Yours is worse than mine, I think.
Painted green.
Both have the Bengals in the North. Okay. I have Jacksonville in the South. You have Houston. I'm okay with that because, again, these things aren't a perfect graph.
I'll stand by that one.
Graph upwards. I'll stick with Jacksonville.
Cincinnati, I honestly don't know about.
I don't know either, but I'm not changing. Right. Like the AFC East, we got to change. And then the West, we both have the Chiefs. Wild cards. Oh, God. Kelly has Baltimore, Miami, and Indianapolis. Wait, can you go back to that, guys?
Yeah.
And I have. Are you ready for this? Oh, boy.
I should have just put the Colts to win the division. I mean, like, they're either winning the division or they're not making the playoffs.
I have Baltimore, Houston, and are you ready for this? My worst call June. The Chargers.
Wow.
What was I thinking?
Yeah, you're right. I didn't notice that one before. That is the one I'm most surprised by.
This was my year where I was like, well, this will be my year to take the Chargers.
Yeah, your year to be on the Chargers.
So that's the one I regret the most. And then conference and Super Bowl, if you could flash it up real quick, guys.
Even these I regret. I think I have the Bills.
I have the Chiefs and the Niners in the as the conference champions. You have the Bills and the Eagles. I have the Niners winning it all. You have the Eagles winning it all. The Chargers is the one I regret the most. And Washington, of course. We'll come back. Drew Dinsick on the other side. Next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on the numbers game, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada here at the D in downtown Las Vegas. He's kind enough to join us each and every Tuesday on the show for not one but two segments. But keep in mind, next week is his week to take the wife out right before football season so that she sort of, is placated. I'll use the word. He doesn't have to use the word. Placated, because what's coming is, of course, a football onslaught. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line at @Whale_Capper, co-host of the Deep Dive Podcast with Andy Molitor, and, of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge with Jake Croucher. What's happening, Drew?
Nothing bad. The football is in the air. You can feel it. My numbers are done. I've watched as much preseason football as I have an appetite for at this point. I think most of my bets for week one are in. I don't know that I'm going to get much more involved because there's not going to be any kind of, I don't think there's going to be much in terms of market shift and news that really kind of moves the needle on any of these games. So I think I'm pretty much ready for week one, and it's just a matter of now, running out the clock here on the off season. There's maybe one move that might matter that there's been in the air a little bit of a whiff of, and that's really just, do the Raiders start the season with Devonta Adams still on the roster? If he ends up on a contender, that would be fascinating and fun. That would be a fun splashy thing. But other than that, I think we're basically set here.
I'm glad you mentioned that you watched the whole preseason. Kelly and I just did a thing. We had the VSiN NFL betting guide came out in June. We put it out super duper early, and then we just did an addendum to it that came out today that is available for folks at VSiN.com/betting-guide. And we were just going through, because there's a grid in June. Okay, who we pick to win every division, that kind of thing. We're just going through how comical some of our plays were so many months ago, right? Before we had a chance to sort of like really dive into every team for some watch preseason. And the ones that I regret the most, on the NFC side, instead of having Seattle as a wild card, I thought I'd get frisky and I put Washington in. So I obviously regret that. Kelly and I both regret our AFC East plays. Neither of us had the Jets. He had the Bills. I had the Dolphins. We now both want to say Jets to win that division. And then the other one was, I was the guy who had the Chargers as one of the wild cards in the AFC. I deeply regret the pain that I've caused anybody by making that play. I'm curious, do you have something? If you went back to Drew Dinsick June, do you have an opinion? Do you have an opinion then that you look back on? You're like, man, I do not know what I was thinking.
I am sure I have plenty of those, Gil. I have plenty of those, but I'm not bearing the cost of any of those because the month of June was my bankroll was hurting. I was coming off of 3 or 4 consecutive months of just getting my absolute tail kicked.
Yeah.
And I think almost, I mean, most of the dollars to my name that I was willing to put into action betting were sitting on Celtics waiting for that, you know, Celtics futures to cash. And so,
basketball wasn't even done. Yeah,
I know. I was in a very tenuous place in terms of liquidity for firing into any of these markets. And, you know, but here's some commentary for you. I can't really remember any takes that I had that were especially strong back then.
I do. Can I give you one?
Okay. Well, yeah, fire away.
You thought you were way down on the Eagles compared to market and you completely shifted.
Yeah. And I actually now I'm kind of like back a little bit where I think they're rated properly, but I see the Eagles as a team that like, if there's one team that doesn't like equal the sum of their parts, like it's clearly the Eagles. Like
right.
That's still a really tenuous situation with two new coordinators and a head coach that, you know, probably should have moved on from, just considering how, you know, how aggressively the locker room gave up on him at the end of last season. But that said, like their schedule is not tough enough to really believe that this team's not going to at least have some success this year. And I think ultimately if they get off to a good start and really it all kind of comes down to week one where I bet them, by the way, I'm into Eagles -2. I think I laid 2.5 and I sold out to like +102 or something. I think ultimately if the Eagles can take care of business against the Packers, then all of a sudden things look pretty darn good for them where they're not going up against any elite offenses until you get to week 8. And so this team could very, very well kind of get the defense, get their legs under them. And the offense just sort of, you know, with a little bit of new wrinkles, be good enough to have this team, you know, at the top of the standings mid-season. Now, if they get through the middle of the portion of the season where things get tough, without like the team quitting on the coach, then the home stretch is also very easy. Panthers, Steelers, Commies, all 14, 15, 16, everybody else is going to be in schedule hell at that point of the year. And they're going to be, you know, presumably coasting through some, you know, teams that we don't think are especially good. And so I think ultimately the Eagles being the one seed in the NFC has got to be a realistic possibility, but again, like if there's one team that doesn't equal the sum of the parts because the locker room just doesn't come together, and just because like there's been a lot of meaningful turnover there. Two coordinators turning over, plus your vocal leader on offense in Kelsey, your vocal leader on defense in Cox. Like that, there's volatility involved with that Eagles team where you just might not get, you know, what you ought to get considering how talented that roster is. But tough to say that the Eagles aren't, you know, a top one or two talented roster from 2 to 53 as you look at that roster. But kind of some other just quick commentary about June to now. There's been very little movement in the market on win totals, like hardly any.
Yeah.
There's been some pretty decent shifts in some of the long shot pools. And I think that makes sense. Like I think the overall, just the people who are putting liquidity into NFL pools over the balance of the summer are finding smarter ways to do it. Cause betting into -110 on either side win totals is pretty, like, I don't see that as a, you know, a long-term way to, you know, exercise your capital efficiently. But if you're, you know, betting into pools with a little bit of higher, you know, higher upside, then that makes sense. And so that's where you've seen most of the action this offseason. There really haven't been much in terms of movement in the win total pool. I'm looking at Circa's numbers from May 14th to today. And the biggest mover to the good was the Panthers. They've gone up 0.45 wins. They were like equivalent to like 5.2 when you account for juice on May 14th, and now they're 5.6. Like that's virtually no movement to the good. The biggest movers down were the Ravens and the Cowboys. Ravens down from 11 to 10.5. Cowboys down from 10.5 to 10. Like half a win move over this much with this much information is just, it's nothing. And I think ultimately, This isn't necessarily to say that the openers were that good. I just think that people find kind of more creative ways to put their capital to work in the summer nowadays.
As you have said for many years, alt season win total markets have a conviction and pound those, because the notion that those are priced properly is probably a fallacy. Could you amuse us with all of yours? This is the last time we'll get to speak to you before the season starts. Can you amuse us with your week one plays, all that you have?
Yes. Let me pull them up so I can give you prices and all. Opening night, I played the Chiefs -3. I'm in at +101. You can still get that, basically. For some reason, I think the market is missing a little bit here. Some of the deficiencies of this Ravens team, particularly out of the gate. This isn't, the Ravens of old who come into this regular season as a sharpened spear. And I think ultimately Chiefs have some pretty advantageous matchups in that one. So laid the 3 with the Chiefs. I'm at -2.5, +102 on the Eagles against the Packers. Mostly just like the Eagles offense matchup against the Packers defense there. I took +6 with the Arizona Cardinals at -102. That's moved pretty aggressively. I like the over in that game at 48 almost as much as I like the Cardinals and the points. This is basically just a bet against the Bills defense and just expecting that the Cardinals are going to be able to go score for score with the Bills and keep this in the ballpark of a one score game. I like the Jacksonville Jaguars at +3. I sold that out to +107. I think in general, the Jaguars are very live to get an upset against the Dolphins. Dolphins are one of the teams that I think are kind of quietly flying under the radar of having a relatively poor preseason. Mostly just in terms of like available bodies who matter. I think ultimately they could stumble out of the gate a bit against the Jaguars team that looks pretty sharp on offense, in my opinion. Favorite bet of the week one card is going to be the Houston Texans at -2.5. I sold that out to -103. My numbers make that on the other side of 3. And I think in general, the team I'm warmest on heading into this season is the Texans. And I've taken a pretty decent chunk of expectation away from the Colts to start the season, considering how much growth we need to see out of their quarterback. So Texans for me, I think, are probably the high upside bet in terms of team that you think could surprise to the good in the AFC.
Yeah, is that one of your big takeaways of the preseason, that Anthony Richardson has big question marks that you might not have otherwise thought he did?
Yeah, and the Colts didn't do anything to improve their secondary, which is, or their wide receiver room. So why they're fiddling around instead of kind of going all in with a rookie quarterback, I think tells you a little bit about the way they see Richardson as well.
Drew's season long NFL plays and the U.S. Open. His tennis picks next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game, un partido de números. For those listening in Spanish, live from Bar Canada here at the D. The Barrage. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9. So much more than a producer. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment here, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, @whale_capper, Deep Dive Pod, and of course NBC Sports Bet the Edge. I want to follow up just on a couple things. I don't want to leave a couple things hanging. One, there is for those who are in Las Vegas anyway, there's a Chiefs -2.5, -110 down at the South Point.
Yep.
Still available.
As well as Eagles, 2.5.
As well as the Eagles, 2.5. And then, Drew, you made a little Davante Adams Raiders comment there in the last segment, and I was just curious if you might want to flesh that out some.
Well, I mean, I don't know that there are many players that could move the needle between now and the start of the season who have a realistic chance of being traded besides Davante Adams. I mean, it's pretty clear that when – I guess I shouldn't even say it's pretty clear. I don't know what the Raiders are doing. Like, the hiring of Tom Telesco was like a very head scratching move. I don't mind sticking with Antonio Pierce because the players like really went out on a limb and played very hard for him. And he got more out of that defense than the talent would suggest that he should have. But then to like go all in free agency and get Christian Wilkins when, you have no answers on the offensive side of the ball, and you sat there at 13, or at least we'll get a quarterback. And then you didn't, you ended up with the second tight end. The whole offseason process felt a little bit, just things didn't break their way. And now you have some pieces, some aspects that look like you're a win now team, like Davante Adams and a Christian Wilkins. And realistically, like, this is at best a 500 team. And I think, the idea that you get what you can get for Adams now, who's what, 31 going into year 32, and would be a huge upgrade for a ton of teams across the league who really just don't have a wide receiver one right now. I'm looking squarely at the Steelers, the Bills. The Bills would be a great fit. Like, these teams could decide, hey, it doesn't make sense to kick the tires on a Tim Patrick or, somebody who's just going to, kind of add to our stockpile of wide receiver threes. Let's just go get a wide receiver one. Especially for a team like the Bills, it would make sense because you can keep him from going to, I don't know, the Jets, who are now favorites to win the AFC East. So, I think that's sort of the one thing that I have my kind of watching the most closely for news, because it seems like they've treated him this preseason as an asset that they're willing to move, and he certainly has been fairly vocal that he would like to find himself in a situation where he is more likely to chase a championship. And I actually did make some bets just speculating on there could be something here, and that was most receiving yards, most receiving touchdowns. Touchdowns is probably the better angle because his target share in the red zone is just absolutely stupid. I think ultimately, if he finds himself on in a better situation all of a sudden, he's priced right now in like sort of the third or fourth tier of wide receivers in these categories. And, his target share would say that, that's not correct if he is with an elite quarterback. So now if he ends up on the Steelers, I'm going to probably tear up those tickets, but there's definitely enough. There were enough teams that were in the mix trying to bring in Brandon Ayuk who now aren't going to get that opportunity, who I think, could pivot and shoot for Adams.
It's amazing. Adams, as you bring up, Brandon Ayuk situation with the Niners still unresolved. Tim Patrick expected to be released if he isn't traded. Do these teams know that, or these guys know that the season starts in 9 days? I mean, that's the uncertainty this late.
You mentioned Trent Williams, like Niners right? Are really playing with fire.
Yes.
Like, that is really something.
And he's a guy who has shown in his career, he is willing to sit it out. And he did it. He was mad with Washington. He sat out forever. He's like, I'm never playing for you guys again. And he was true to his word. Different reasons, but still, he's a stubborn guy. Or stands by his principles, however you want to spin that. Season-long NFLs. Give me a couple minutes on that before we get to tennis.
Yeah, sure. So the biggest out on a limbs for me, and we've talked about these, I feel like, and so this is a little bit maybe of a summary statement here, but I mentioned in the last segment, I look at particularly the roster construction and, some of the young players that you've seen already emerge for the Houston Texans. And I don't understand why they're not like clearly on paper, a super team. They're sort of still being priced in the, team that takes another step forward. And, when they made the move for Stephon Diggs in this, in the spring, like I think a lot of people, kind of took some shots then, or, the market really kind of shortened a lot of their prices for the Texans. And for that reason, when people kind of started chewing on, how is this team being rated by the market at the start of this, preseason cycle, it looked pretty clearly like, wow, well, everything's baked in. Like this is a high expectations for a team that we did not think was going to be very good to start the year last year. But I don't know what else you need to see from CJ Stroud. I don't know what else you need to see from Bobby Slowick. I would like to see less first down, second down running personally, but we'll get to that, I suppose. I think the even more than that, like the defensive side of the ball was always more of the question about the Texans, but DeMeco Ryans has done an incredible job of coaching up some of these young players. You have potential breakout CB1 now with Derek Stingley, who has been just an absolute monster all through camp. You have a pass rush anchored by Danielle Hunter, who's, is shortened to what, 10-1 for defensive player of the year odds. Like, this is all of a sudden a very legitimate Texans team with not a lot of clear and obvious weaknesses. You can point to the offensive line and say this Texans team is going to be handicapped in that regard. But for whatever reason, CJ Stroud plus Bobby Slowick seems to be completely offensive line agnostic. And so it kind of doesn't even really matter if they're not very good there. So, know, death by a thousand cuts with this skill position group. Best 1, 2, 3 wide receivers in the division by margin, and maybe in all of the AFC. So this is a team that I think you can take some swings on to, you know, to really hit their upside. I think the best angle in is CJ Stroud MVP, because he sort of fits the exact archetype of doesn't turn the ball over and has enough high enough volume and has sort of the pedigree now with his rookie of the year campaign last year, followed by a playoff win, that people aren't going to have a tough time being like, yeah, no, he's the most valuable player if this team is, you know, the one seed in the AFC. So that's the angle that I chose to pursue. Texans bullish, you know, being one of the bulls on parade there. And then in the NFC, I'm most favorable relative to market for the Seattle Seahawks. My angle was coach of the year for Mike McDonald. That has shortened aggressively to the point that I don't know that it's worth a bet now. I think it could take till about midseason before the Seattle defense is fully, you know, kind of up to the expectation that I'm expecting it to be. But the market is still rating them in like the low 20s. And I think that's very wrong. So, you know, for me, at least, those are sort of the two most fun two, you know, angles to the good. I'm against the Bears. I'm against the Steelers. I would really love the Steelers to lose, you know, to be the fewest wins this year. That's a high upside bet that I made, just considering that their schedule down the stretch is so poor and that their offense has completely failed to take off this preseason. So, you know, this is those are sort of the teams that I'm cool on relative to market. And then everything else, I think, is pretty fairly priced as we head into this regular season.
All right.
So.
CJ Stroud, by the way, plus 850 we're showing for MVP. Mike McDonald, now the third short shot for Coach of the Year, only behind Harbaugh and Eberflus at 10-1 That at DraftKings. Tennis, how did yesterday go? What do you got today?
Mixed yesterday. I won most of my match bets, but I took an absolute bath on Holger Rune, who
he got destroyed. Mr.
Brendan Nakashima.
Yeah.
That was awful performance from him, and really questioning what I ever saw in Holger Rune, honestly.
Everyone is.
I should mention one thing on the outrights market. Our friend Jay Croucher was pressing me on the men's draw, and there's got to be some long shot worth the bet, and I looked at my numbers and I was like, well, I'm at 35-1 for Grigor Dimitrov, and market was 132-1. So I ended up with a pretty decent size upside bet on Dimitrov to make a run here. I think if you are playing long shots on the men's draw, you're shooting for the bottom half, because that avoids only, you only have to play one of Alcaraz or Sinner if you have a guy go deep. You know, I think you're basically hoping that Djokovic, you know, just either can't handle the conditions when you go up against him, or something weird happens to him in that match against Alexei Popperin, which is sort of a sneaky third round difficult early test for him. So, yeah, men's draw. I'm a Grigor Dimitrov guy now, and
he got to the semifinals back in 2019.
Yeah, and he's playing well. Like his the level we saw from him at Miami is good enough to make a deep run here. As far as match betting today, everything looks super fair. I'm cheering for Naomi Osaka against Ostapenko because I have some outrights on Naomi. And then I bet Otto Virtanen at plus 102 against Quinton Halas. And I bet Gabriel Diallo at minus 1.5 games, minus 108 against Jaime Munar.
Okay. Virtanen was one of the last ones I cut out and did not play. Interesting. I would have been on the opposite side of you, but I didn't touch the Munar match. So good luck on both of those, because I am not involved. And yes, Osaka Ostapenko, along with Paolini and Andrescu, probably the matches of the day. Certainly Ostapenko Osaka. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it. Drew Dinsick, everybody. Guys. You too. At whale underscore capper. More NFL on the other side.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You can watch episode 3 of Circus Survivor, The Quest for $9.2 million tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on VSiN. 5-part docuseries takes you inside the high-stakes world of the annual Circus Survivor contest. Follow the contestants as they make all-or-nothing picks over the 2023 NFL season and go behind the scenes of the world's largest legal betting contest. Episode 2 was nice last night as well. Again, Sharapan, breakout star. Let me just say that again. He is tonight again in episode 3. Several VSiN hosts make appearances along the way to offer their advice as well. Stormy prominently featured. You can watch the remaining episodes this week, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on VSiN.com and YouTube TV as well, YouTube TV, that is, as well as a live broadcast on X, where people are checking it out live. Go to VSiN.com/Survivor for details or to watch episodes 1 and 2. Best tweet I got, Kelly, about Circus Survivor last night was from the Numbers guys, who said, "Hey, Gil, another great addition of the Circus Survivor doc." He said, "How come they wouldn't let you use your voice modulator as heard on Numbers Game?" So he believes that as we broadcast here from the food court here on the second floor of the D, that we are, that my voice is being modulated electronically.
I mean, hey, different microphones, different places. They well, do sound
we
different.
We were in a casino screaming during the documentary.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to go with Gil sounds more different in the documentary than he does every single day on air. But
later on the show, we will use T-Pain's voice box. Ain't none of them hot. How I'm going to do the rest of the show.
How quick would you drive away the entire audience if we just had that? Remember they had the app? Remember it was like that app that came out?
Shorty,
everybody was
what
addicted to it
name?
For like 5 days before you're like, all right, this is really annoying.
If it's to, we did the whole show in all kinds of different old-timey things or anything like that. No, it's not modulated. Sorry, this is me.
What's
we're
the,
screaming.
What's the oldest non-sports app on your phone that you still use?
Ooh, that I still use?
Yeah.
I only
bring this up because I just did it like yesterday here. Like Shazam, I feel like was like one of the first apps available like on Apple on iPhones.
Shazam was the first, was when you use Shazam for the first time, you're like, oh my God, we're in the future.
Right, exactly. I still use it to this day.
We have arrived in the future. Oh, I still use Shazam all the time. I'm going to say for sports.
And outside of like the basics.
Oh, I was just going to say the basics.
Like, like Google Maps. Don't give me that answer.
Yeah, I was going to say Yahoo. I get Yahoo Spectacular used to be, or Sportacular. I use the Yahoo app for scores.
Okay. Always, people, where you get your scores, the app, which app you use or site, it's amazing how many different answers there are. A lot of people use different places.
I would like the answer to be the VSiN app, but you know, we'll see what happens there. I have the White Sox. Do we have the tweets, by the way? We'll do those later. We'll do those later. I have the White Sox update. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Oh God, before I get to that, I just saw this come over. Are you ready for this? The Washington what is this? Commanders, it says? Yeah, I refuse. The Washington Commanders announced a new 8-year stadium rights agreement. You ready for this sexy sponsor? Northwest Federal Credit Union. Terms run through the 2031-32 season for current stadium only, but do not preclude the franchise from opening a new stadium earlier. Let's go. Let's go, RFK. The new name of this stadium is called, you ready? Northwest Stadium. Oh, my God. Live from historic Northwest Stadium in Raljohn, Maryland.
I want to say they're smart for shortening the name, but, like, now you're just kind of, is it misleading directional-wise, by the way? Like, is the stadium somehow in a northwest area of anything?
No, not really.
I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to give them some credit for something.
Landover is not northwest of D.C. Yeah, no.
That's kind of a problem.
Back to the White Sox for a second. Oh, God, Northwest Stadium. Back to the White Sox. So I was wondering earlier out loud, because we showed this unbelievable tweet about just the futility, the different ways you can slice the futility of the Chicago White Sox. And from James Fegan, one fact more unbelievable than the previous. Again, a pitcher who had a 7.97 ERA holds the White Sox to one earned run over five innings. A pitcher for the Tigers, Ty Madden, last night. It was the 31st blown save by the Sox bullpen of the year. 31! Their whole record, their entire record, their standings, the record in the standings is 31-101. 70 games under 500. 70 under 500 with 132 games played, 31-101. And they're 3-33 versus Kansas City, Detroit, and Minnesota, three of their division opponents. So I sent it up to Mark Borch and I said, all right, what's the total number of games? Because from a betting standpoint, what was amazing, Mark and I talked about this in the Q2 Derivatives podcast, Beating the Book. The White Sox as a first five betting proposition are actually kind of break-even-y. They're like the eighth best first five team if you blindly bet them first five all year long. That's incredible. And it is, as displayed in this tweet, it's all about how bad their bullpen is, right? They have leads, actually, after the first five. And they're dogs, and so the price works out that you'd have broke even betting them first fives. Anyway, total games they've played, 132. Kelly, they have led after five innings 48 times. They have lost.
Wait, hold on. How many games have we played?
132.
Okay.
They have led after five innings 48 times.
It's not bad.
They have lost.
Close to break even-y. I'm trying to get my life to a break even-y
now,
point.
Now, remember, they're going to be tied in some of those, too. But they've led to the point of our bet, the double result bet, because some books offer this White Sox win, White Sox lose, first five full game. So they have led 48 times after five innings. They have lost 23 of those games. So 23 instances out of 132, a 174 hit percentage, in other words. The bet is priced usually at around plus 725, which is a 12.1% implied probability. So you're basically up 57 units blind betting the double result every single game this year, 132 times.
That is wild.
Now, if someone had come on air before the season started and said to you, you know what I think I'm going to do with the White Sox this year? I think they're going to be pretty good in the first five.
Would have laughed them off the show.
You would have been like, what are you talking
about? You can't bet that way.
Bet that way. That's the most ridiculous thing ever. This is what makes sports betting so incredible. 57 units to the positive.
Oh, man. The part we haven't really brought up, like, you just, like, I feel bad for the players, like, the everyday players and the starting pitchers. Like, the bullpen's got to be just hated. Just hated.
One other thing you brought up in the, you were talking about, like, if you forgive this sports talk radio moment here. You were talking about this thing, this documentary. Speaking of documentaries, this Michigan sign stealing Untold is out now.
Yeah, this is so ridiculous.
So Kelly asked the very poignant question, who do you believe more, Connor Stallions from the University of Michigan sign stealing scandal? I have not seen the documentary yet.
I was reading.
Or Yannick Sinner.
Yeah, or Yannick Sinner. I was reading a bit. I was on ESPN.com reading a bit of the Stallion story this morning, and then on ESPN I caught a package they ran on Yannick Sinner and how it like all happened, how his test got contaminated. And you're just like, oh my God, there's 14 levels to each one of these stories that like
people want to believe Yannick Sinner though, because he's such a nice guy, right? And we are all human beings, and so that factors into people's brains. Now, Andy Roddick points out that there was a lower-level player who had the same infinitesimal amount of a trace detected who was treated in the same manner. So Andy Roddick's position, former world number one, former U.S. Open champion, his position is you have to let it be adjudicated this way with the Yannick Sinner because there's precedent for it.
Which is a good point.
But other people say, how do you know this trace, this remnant, is not just a remnant from a larger sample? We don't, right? So I don't know.
There's so many of these. I mean, what's the story? One of the coaches or his medical guy?
Seuss.
Cut his finger, right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Then got some ointment from a doctor in Italy that's only available in Italy, applied it on his cut finger, then massaged Yannick Sinner, who apparently had cuts on his legs. Therefore, the drug transferred from blood system to blood system. Like, what are we talking about here? Come on. And then Stallions is, oh, yeah, like, I bought tickets for these games. But then I gave him to friends.
The answer to your question is Stallions is less believable.
I think they're both absurd.
Because this dude was like a lifelong Michigan fan who like systematically tracked the sign stealing like data through the years. Like this guy was absolutely. And then he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. This guy, Stallions, is less believable.
In the documentary, Stallions tells the NCAA that, quote, there are some people who attended games using tickets that I purchased and recorded parts of those games.
Remember the Central Michigan game?
Nothing to do with Michigan there.
Remember the Central Michigan one where he denies that he's the guy that they spot on the sidelines? But Dave Portnoy from Barstool says, no, he told me it was him. So, I mean,
what are we doing?
If Dave Portnoy is the voice of reason, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's something. By the way, you say ointment. Ointment. Whenever ointments are involved, that's bad. Yeah. That's one of my least favorite words.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrible word.
Ointment. I think that was a word my mom used to say. Gilly, maybe an ointment will work. We'll come back. Michael Montesano. College football and pro football plays next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.